Welcome to My Vagina, this is Jesse Karen.
And this is Rebecca Frank. And here we are again, having our current historical, hysterical, and infuriating conversation about our lives as vagina-having organisms.
All content made up on the spot, but probably researched. Just kidding, fools, it's definitely researched. Sounded so angry. I didn't mean for it to. It's definitely a razor. Yeah, that's how I feel right now.
Yeah, shit's crazy.
Yeah, so today, you know, we first want to start out by acknowledging that this is happening and that we should definitely pay attention to it and we should find all the resources and email and protest and as we've talked about before off the air, everyone has their own lane. Please try not to shame yourself as long as you're putting the work in some way. Donating to the cause or donating to local businesses that are owned by Black people or emailing the higher-ups.
Yeah, educating yourself, having hard conversations with your friends and family. You know, it's work that we unfortunately have to do all the time, because even though we're seeing some pretty awesome steps so far, there's still like a lot of stuff that we need to do in our daily lives. So
if you're not putting in the work, we have put some resources in the notes so you can go to those and do all that shit.
Yeah, I'll put in we're gonna put in a reading list, some places to donate, and just like one thing that I wanted to make sure we just talked about this right before we came on is that one of the big places people are donating now is bail funds, which is really important. But before you donate, make sure that there is actually cash bail in the location to which you're donating. For example, DC does not have cash bail. So any organization that's raising money for cash bail in DC is a scam. Like anything, there are always going to be people trying to take advantage, which is fucked. But
yeah,
people are assholes, so.
And, you know, for people who are putting in the work and who are either protesting and, you know, going out there and doing shit. God, I have such a way with words. It's so romantic. It's fucking Staten Island. Got to throw one bad word in there.
There's even though right now our attention is really focused on the protests and like these big missions that we have to take down Confederate statues, to defund the police, to work towards ending racism and police brutality. There are so many people in the past who have done this work and people who continue to do the work today in completely different areas. And so we're going to highlight a couple of those.
Next thing I'm going to give him 6 feet in the cold ground. You can never tell what an old man can do.
Okay, so in honor of Pride Month, I chose Gladys Alberta Bentley. She was a gender-bending blues performer who became 1920s Harlem royalty.
Wow!
She is pretty cool. She was known for donning a top hat and tuxedo. She performed in Harlem spots like the Clam House, which was a Prohibition-era speakeasy in Harlem. She also performed a lot at the, I could be saying this wrong, the Ubangi Club. It's U-B-A-N-G-I. Yeah, she's considered one of the boldest performers of her era. I think that some people would even suggest that maybe she's the bee's knees or the cat's pajamas.
The cat's meow?
The cat's meow, even.
Wow.
I think what you mean is meow. Yeah, so when she wasn't accompanied by her piano, she often went through the audience flirting with women in the crowd and soliciting dirty lyrics as she sang to them. So she was like super known for her gender-bending blues numbers.
That's awesome.
I know. She is pretty fucking incredible. According to author Jim Wilson, she would take popular songs of the day and just put the filthiest lyrics possible. She took songs like Sweet Alice Blue Gown and Georgia Brown and combined them and it became a song about anal sex.
Yes.
Dwandalyn Reese, curator of music and performing arts at the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, said that Bentley was not the first to sing raunchy music, but she was still breaking barriers by pushing the boundaries of public taste in a way that would have been much more suitable for a man to do. Mm-hmm. Which is true, because we have to like look at the times and how fucking groundbreaking this must have been. Not only to be a Black woman, not only to just be a lesbian, but one who is like straight up wearing a top hat, a tail coat, and dressing strictly as a man.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that would even be, that would be a little bit like off-putting even today to some people. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, it's totally dependent on where you are, which is also kind of another reason why she might have moved to New York in the first place. A lot of sources say that she was born in Philadelphia, but during the Groucho Marx show, Groucho Marx show. Thank you. I got stuck in a cycle. I couldn't undo Grouch. In the Groucho Marx show, in 1958, she actually did let it slip that she was born in Port-au-Prince because her parents were from Trinidad. So, but it's no surprise that she moved to Harlem, where she would have been more accepted in a community that was home to other sexually fluid entertainers like Bessie Smith and Ethel Waters. Historian Henry Louis Gates Jr. even described the Harlem Renaissance by saying, "It's surely as gay as it is black."
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was just like this huge community. And they also apparently, like, back during Prohibition era, the police turned a blind eye to it. People, many of whom were white, were seeking entertainment and covert access to alcohol crowded into Harlem nightclubs and all the speakeasies and parties. It's interesting that, like, to me, that all the, like, white people, like, fled to Harlem when, you know, all the alcohol and parties were happening and they couldn't get it in their own neighborhoods. You know, just, mm-hmm. like, more proof that black people gave us all the best things, you know, that we have, like, music and entertainment and dancing.
Yeah.
But then over the course of the 30s, after the 18th Amendment, the prohibition of alcohol was repealed and the country went into a depression, tolerance waned, obviously.
Right.
And as she grew more popular, her celebrity, like her being a celebrity, became less acceptable and performing in South Harlem became super difficult. Yeah. Oh, so another thing that I really love about her was that she was super known for confronting male entitlement and sexual abuse in her lyrics and obviously declared her own sexual independence, like, without abandon. A 1928 recording of her Worried Blues for OK Records, Bentley sang, "What made you men folk treat us women like you do? I don't want no man that I got to give my money to."
Wow. And not much has changed, it feels
no,
like.
No, absolutely not. Like, it's weird, though, because the Harlem Renaissance is this, like, weird point in time where everything actually seemed to be super acceptable. You know, like, there was this, like, little moment of a renaissance where, like, everything was okay. Like, it didn't matter who you liked. I'm sure it's different. And I think it was mostly in the pocket of Harlem,
right,
versus the whole world. But, you know, it's interesting how that can work and people are constantly pulling back from it. You know, like,
yeah,
it clearly works for everyone.
Right. And just how, like, I mean, you know, throughout history, how there have been pockets of real, like, economic or cultural growth in the black community that is celebrated or ignored by like whatever authority figures, be that like the police or white supremacy or whatever, who then come and quash it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's like fine until it gets too big and it stops entertaining them.
Right.
You know,
right. Or it becomes a threat
like Black Wall Street.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Fucking insane story.
If you guys don't know about it, you should look it up.
You should fucking 100% look it up. Let's go back for a quick history of Gladys Bentley, who was born on August 12th, 1907, to her parents Mary Bentley and George Bentley, both from Trinidad, as I said earlier. She was the oldest of four siblings. She does not remember having a happy childhood. Her parents were, from a very early age, like, worried about her attraction to women. Yes, Rebecca?
I was just, you know, acknowledging that I heard that.
So she poured herself into music. Her talents as a pianist and songwriter showed up super quick. She moved to New York City at 16 and began performing at house parties that were called buffet flats.
That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard that.
I understand it.
So there are illicit clubs, usually in brownstones, that offered music, alcohol, gambling, and...
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay, so like a flat, like as in an apartment, and then you can get everything that you want here. Dancing, music, food, drinks.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fun. I'd go to a buffet flat.
I would fucking... Hell yeah. I'd go to any buffet.
Same. Except, Except that all-you-can-eat sushi buffet on Fifth Avenue that makes me feel really weird.
Oh, yeah, no. Fuck that. No.
Don't go to that buffet.
But I love me a buffet. Like, I can't choose one. I love and hate choices at the same time.
I know. You end up with, like, a plate piled with stuff, and you have, like, four
with,
bites,
like,
and then you're full.
Two things.
Yeah, I
like,
know.
Two of each from every spot.
I know.
To find out more about our buffet tactics, please focus on the notes. So she was recorded intermittently in the 20s and 30s, but none of them truly capture how awesome her live performances were, which makes sense. Like, if you can even see how fast her fingers are moving at on the Groucho Marx show, it's incredible. And she, not surprised, wasn't widely played on the radio.
But shocker.
Shocker. But she was a huge fixture at all the clubs and toured nationally after she graduated from the buffet flats and the rent party circuit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she obviously became like a huge nightclub performer. In an article she wrote about her life for Ebony Magazine and said that soon after arriving in Harlem, she had auditioned at the Madhouse, a venue on 133rd Street, which was in need of a male pianist. And at the Madhouse, the boss was reluctant to give her a chance until she had to convince him by literally showing him how fast her hands flew over the keys. And when she finished her first number, the burst of applause was, like, insane.
Yeah, it's like, imagine how many, even, like, to this day, how many people with incredible talent and skills and potential are not given an opportunity because of gender, race, or, you know, sexual orientation or whatever.
And it also must take so much, like, she's clearly such a bold human. Like, it must take so much gusto to, like, be like, no, you're going to fucking listen to me. Like, that takes a lot more than people realize. So, like, that alone, and to be, like, a Black woman who is a lesbian and, like, you know, dresses like a man, I can only imagine.
Yeah, at that time.
At that time, how much she had to, like, prove and to force people to prove. Like, to, like, be like, let me show you how fucking good I am. For the customers of the club, one of the unique things about her was obviously her shirts and her Oxfords and her short Eton jacket and her hair cut straight back. But advertisers would promote her as a male impersonator.
I feel like they missed the point.
Yeah, as they often do. And at the height of her fame, she said in an Ebony essay that she was living on Park Avenue with a team of servants paying $300 a month in rent, which is over $5,000 in today's dollars.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so she was doing okay.
Yeah.
She also at one point told reporters that she married a white woman at a ceremony in New Jersey. And I, just from the quote that she said to this gossip columnist, makes me love her. She had told the gossip columnist that she had just gotten married, and the gossip columnist asked, well, who's the man? And she scoffed and said, man, it's a woman.
That's awesome.
So there's,
like, obviously that columnist hadn't done any research.
No, right? Seriously. Yeah. There's no record of that union taking place, but the story is still a glimpse of, like, how fucking unapologetically open she was about her sexual orientation. This is a quote from Wilson that I spoke about earlier, who said that one of the frustrating and joyous things about Gladys Bentley was that she was constantly reinventing herself. Oftentimes when she mentioned something about her personal life, you had to take it with a grain of salt and not necessarily take it for the truth, because she, like, knew what people wanted and she knew what the press wanted.
Yeah. I mean, creating a persona it's like she branded herself, and before branding was a real thing. You know what I mean? Like, she's, talk about being ahead of her time.
Yeah. Yep. She wound up, an observer called her show, because she would sometimes appear at the Apollo Theater or the Cotton Club. She held residency at a club on Park Avenue in Midtown. But in 1934, Midtown Manhattan, the King's Terrace was padlocked by the police officers after an observer complained of the dirty songs performed there. And an observer called it a masculine garbed smut singing entertainer.
Ah, she probably loved that.
I hope so, but she apparently also shut down the King's Terrace.
Wow.
It led to the shutdown.
Wow. It's like they decided, they, like, had let her go ahead and do what she was going to do until someone made, like, a official complaint about it. And then they felt like they didn't have a choice.
And you know it was a Karen. You fucking know it was, like, a girl with a dog in a leash at Central Park.
It's like Amy Cooper 50 years ago.
She's not even in the club.
Right? She's just walking by outside.
Yep. So anyway, I'll skip pretty much to the end, but she never stopped touring, but she at some point, you know, the Harlem, after the prohibition was repealed and everybody started to get a little bit less accepting, she moved to LA and was sometimes often forced to wear skirts on stage. Like, the only place that she wasn't was Mona's 440 Club, the first lesbian bar in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Red Scare brought a new wave of repressive social politics in the McCarthy era.
Right.
And they targeted homosexuals. And obviously, she became a national menace just for being who she is. But she never stopped touring. She began to consistently, like, wear women's clothing in the 1950s. She got married twice to men. One of them who denied it, which is weird.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
And then here's where it gets a little sad, but let's not forget this person was fantastic. In 1952, the same year she signed a recording contract with the Swing Time label, she wrote in the Ebony essay titled I Am a Woman Again that she had undergone hormone treatments to help her identify as a heterosexual. She described the life of, yeah, I know. Ugh.
Imagine working that hard to be who you are. It just goes to show you that it's like a daily struggle for, you know, depending on where you are and what time and all this kind of stuff. If you're not living in an accepting society, you have to struggle to define yourself as you want to be every single day. Sometimes you just get tired. And
yeah, man. And even if you don't, like, that's a conversation I was having with somebody the other day where they're like, And I agree, like, don't get me wrong, like, there is persistence and you have to keep fighting. Like, that's what life is all about, obviously. But that doesn't fucking include, like, people straight up being like, okay, well, like, if you can't perform anywhere because of the color of your skin or because of your sexual orientation or your, you know, sexual preference, then, like, what the fuck are you supposed to do?
Yeah, at a certain point, it comes, like, it's beyond what you're able to fight for.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can keep fighting and when people look back, the fight will be really important. But God, in the time, it just must feel so fruitless.
Yeah. And also, like, look how easily we erased. I had no idea who this was.
Yeah, I didn't either.
It was so fucking easy to erase this person who was, like, obviously clearly talented and so many other names came out of the Harlem Renaissance. Where's hers?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, it seems like she went through a lot in the past, like, last few years. I mean, in 1958 was 2 years before she died, and she was on the Groucho Marx show, and she was performing still. So she never stopped doing that. In 1960, she did die of pneumonia, and she had been living in California with her mother, and she was waiting to be ordained as a minister in the Temple of Love in Christ.
Aw.
I know. But yeah, I don't know. Like, she's just a super awesome example of, I don't know, doing shit on her own terms in the entertainment business during the fucking Great Depression and the Prohibition era. Like, she always...
And the McCarthy era. I mean, that's a tough fucking time.
Dude,
that's
for just... real.
Yeah, that's one after another.
Yeah, Wilson said this, and I totally agree that she should be remembered as a gender outlaw.
Yeah.
She was just defiant in who she was, and for gender and sexuality studies today, she shows the performance of gender.
Oh, I think... Yeah, I think that's a really inspiring story, even though...
I think so, too.
I feel like, you know, you really wish... I mean, who knows who she would have been without the tests that she faced.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you wish that you could really see people just be themselves without having to fight for that basic right.
Totally. But you know? At the end of the day, like, I at first was like, this seems like such a really sad ending, but also it's kind of not. Like, this person lived through all these, like, crazy fucking ridiculous eras and still was performing until the day that she died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's what she was fucking good at. And she was still bringing joy and, like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she fucking killed the Renaissance.
Yeah. I'm going to go look up her videos.
Oh, it's beautiful. You should. And on the Groucho Marx show, it was so funny because she at some point was like, he was like, why don't you sing us something? And she's like, well, what do you want to hear? I have 500 songs that I could sing you right now. And I was like, girl.
That's awesome. That is so cool. I'll have to look up that performance. I'll put it in the episode notes for everybody.
Yeah, definitely look her up when she's singing and doing piano. Her piano is, like, outrageous.
Yeah, awesome. But.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
I've got Krista Scruggs. She's really fucking awesome. I was trying to figure out who I wanted to talk about. And while I was looking around the internet and kind of trying to find someone interesting who I'd never heard of before, I found this woman, Krista Scruggs. She's a biodynamic winemaker.
Ooh.
And the thing that made me really excited is that her tagline for her vineyard that she has is just fucking fermented juice. And I was like, yeah, I love her.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So she grew up in California. She's currently living in Vermont, and she works in Vermont and in the Hill Country wine region of Texas. So she kind of classifies that as her like northern and southern hemisphere for winemaking. Yeah. She founded her own label called Zaffa Wines, and the name means counterspell, which comes from the book The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao from Juno Diaz.
Yeah.
And she thinks of herself as a counterspell because she is a queer Black woman living in Vermont in a very white state, doing working in an industry that is very white.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just this counterspell. She's this really unique, interesting, hardworking woman who's just like revolutionizing, it seems like, what Vermont wines can be.
Yeah.
So originally, she wanted to be the first woman to play basketball in the NBA.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Big dreams. But she hurt her knee.
Okay.
So she decided to try doing something else. So she started working with a wine company in California, but felt disconnected to the land. And so she decided she wanted to kind of travel around and learn some more about the farming aspect. She wanted to know everything about how good wine is made. So she went to, like, you know, like, she was in Washington State. She went to Italy. She went to France, learning everything, you know, how to harvest, how to grow, about, you know, pH balance, all this kind of stuff. And so after all of that, she moved back to the U.S., ended up getting a job in California, which wasn't for her. And she moved to Vermont, where she started working with this woman, Deirdre Heekin, who is her mentor. And in Vermont, she was able to start the label Zaffa. And her first vintage she called Jungle Fever, which stood out in like the natural wine world because it was really good, apparently. And the name is super provocative right. for like this really like, you know, hoity-toity industry.
Right.
So 6 months after pouring her first wine, she was named one of Wine Enthusiast's 40 Under 40 Tastemakers back in 2018. So I read this interview that she did with Marissa Ross from Bon Appetit magazine, and she was talking about how she didn't find the reward terribly like supportive of her journey and what she had done. She felt that as a Black queer female winemaker, she thought it was kind of like skewed almost. And this is a quote from the article. She said, "There is this narrative that I'm this poor Black girl from Oakland who got plucked out of a wine bar, started making wine in Vermont on a lark, and became an overnight success. But oh my I'm from God. Fresno, from Central California's farming belt." Her grandpa was a farmer in California, so she grew up spending weekends farming with him. And it, you know, it highlights the fact that like the story of Black farmers in America is not told at all. And there's this assumption that you have to have this like ghetto to glory timeline, that every Black person came from an inner city and just, you know,
like, why talent, is that the only narrative?
right. And that talent was stumbled upon instead of honed. And that it's like luck instead of hard work. And it's just, you know, it's crazy. So she said that, you know, she just found like the whole thing, like part of why she got her, she wants her fame to be about the quality of her wine. And of course she wants to change the face of winemaking and be like, it's acceptable for anybody to do it. But she also doesn't, she wants her story told accurately. Mm-hmm. So she decided.
That'd be nice.
Right? So she decided that instead of just launching her own label, she also wanted to be a vinerone. Which means it's a grape farmer. Oh. So she has her own vineyard also.
Okay. Amazing.
She does it all. And she only hires women.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. She's like, I know that, you know, you're seeing my vineyard and you're just seeing women around here. And I'm making an intentional decision to only hire women because I think it's important for us also to have a place. And I want us to have better representation.
What a weird concept.
Right? And she... And she's talking about how, like, people don't spend as much time talking about how good her wine is. I mean, the descriptions that I read of her wine was like, I want to taste it. But she's spotlighted for her race and her gender because that's the story that people want to hear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those people love those, like, rags to riches stories.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, I'm proud of my history and I'm proud of who I am. And I'm happy that people want to highlight all of these things about me because they are acknowledging that she's struggled in a homogenized industry. But
that's only part of the story.
Exactly. Like, they don't take the time to actually get to know her and learn her story.
And her work. Also, like, the things that she's making.
Exactly.
Her story is important, but, like, what she's making, it, like, focus on, like, how she got that. How'd she do that?
Right. Right. She's not making the wine for her story to get out. She's making the wine because she loves to make the wine.
Yes.
But
yeah.
She was able to break into this very white and male industry because she's fucking good.
Yeah.
And it's not because someone took pity on her.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So she says, another thing that she said was that, people are always saying, like, there's, like, this idea about, like, the importance of diversity, of course, but that people, that she gets included in these different lists because people say that they need her.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this idea that they need someone who looks like her doing what she's doing. So they commoditize the fact that she's a Black woman in Vermont rather than, like you were saying, allowing her product to speak for itself.
Yes. Yeah.
And she said, I thought this quote was really cool. She said, "They're commoditizing the fact that I'm a Black woman in Vermont. It doesn't just undermine the last 8 years of my life. It erases my history, which already happens as a Black person."
Mm-hmm.
But she's built this, like, really amazing community in Vermont. She became friends with the people who make Shaxbury cider. and they gave her a loan to help her open a cellar and tasting room in Burlington.
Cool.
Yeah, and then her apple supplier, because she does some, like, grape, some wine with farged apples in it.
Ooh.
Yeah. I want to go to her.
I do, too. I know. I'm just
thinking. You want to take a road trip?
Yeah, let's go there. Like, my mouth is salivating.
I know. So she also, her apple supplier, this guy Carl Cobb of Canamic Farms, he helped her to get a lease for 40 acres of land on Grand Isle. So she was able to have 10 acres of vines and 20 acres of apples. So that opened, I think, for the 2019 year.
Yeah.
So she's just really awesome. She's like, you know, I'm doing all of this stuff. She says she's far away from her family and from, you know, anyone that looks like her. But she says if that's what the cost that I have to pay to make the wine and to like live my purpose, then that's what I'm going to do. And I'm just going to let what I do speak for itself.
Yes.
She's just like, I watched so many videos with her and she's just so fucking cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I just like, you know, been thinking a lot about like how overwhelmingly white the, you know, alcohol and wine industry
is. Dude, especially wine. Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I just love it. I love this story. And I just, it's, you know, it's like thinking about all of the other, you know, groundbreakers in all sorts of different industries, these different trailblazers who just open up possibility. You know, it takes one person to really like smash expectations to let other people's minds grow to what possibilities are there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Ugh.
So, yeah, I'm excited to see.
I like that
what
here
she
I
does.
Am attitude.
Yeah.
You know, like even like just thinking about Gladys and this woman, too, just being like, this is me.
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And I'm just doing what I do because I love it.
Yeah.
And so get out of my way.
I need that. I need that in my head.
Me too. So, yeah, that's Krista Scruggs. And she's like young, too, you know, just like crushing it. She's like around our age, I feel like. At least, I mean, I didn't look at her birthday. She looks like she's around our age. I don't know. But
yeah,
she's pretty.
She sounds
she's pretty
phenomenal.
Cool.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
I love that. I can't wait to taste her wine.
I know.
And like also love that we're in the middle of her story.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where she goes because, I mean, she, you know, she could change everything.
Yeah.
Because natural wine is exploding right now. So imagine, you know, a like queer Black woman getting on the ground floor and being able to really revolutionize that entire industry.
Hell,
I mean,
yeah.
That just changes possibility.
Yeah.
Changes everything.
Amazing.
Yay.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's Krista Scruggs.
That's Krista Scruggs.
First and foremost, wine is an agricultural product. And I hope that when people see me carrying buckets and bales of grapes and it clicks with them, that this, what's in their bottle, came from somewhere. And these people are wearing their clothes that they're wearing out in the vineyard and that they can make that line that this first is something that was farmed and had a lot of TLC and care that went into it.
Now that you've met some really awesome trailblazers, just want to kind of bring it back around to current day and everything that's happening and just say that this is a marathon. A lot of the changes that have been made in the past have taken weeks or months or years of sustained movement. And so it's okay to take some time off to care for yourself because you're no good if you're burned out.
Yeah, you have to take energy. You have to get that energy back to come back and fight another day or you'll fucking burn out and we can't have that right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so like if you need to take a day or two off, go to the beach with your friends if it's safe.
Yes.
You know, make yourself a nice dinner, turn your phone off, watch a bullshit movie.
Yeah.
Take a bath.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of crap shows afterwards.
Yeah, it's important. And so don't, you know, give yourself permission because taking care of yourself is the best way to make the biggest difference.
Got to put your mask on before you can help anybody else.
Exactly. That's what they say on the airplane.
That's what I say all the time. I'm always looking for my mask.
Right. I know. I've gone outside without it so many times.
I feel like I'm the person in my like imaginary plane, you know, and my imaginary plane is my mental scape. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, where the bath? You know, nobody can see me floating around, but I'm reaching everywhere for my mask because I can't find it. That's anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I'll put my mask on and then I'll help you with yours.
Thanks, girl.
No problem. I got you. Thanks for listening to Welcome to My Vagina.
It's time for us to slide on out of here. You can find us on Instagram at Welcome to My Vagina.
On Twitter at Welcome to My Vag. Soon to be on Medium.
You can donate to us at Patreon, LiberaPay, PayPal, and Venmo at Welcome to My Vagina.
Yeah, become a monthly subscriber.
Yeah. Yeah, go to welcometomyvagina.com and become a subscriber to our newsletter as mm-hmm. well.
You can email us at welcometomyvagina@gmail.com.
We like questions and fan art and jingles.
And suggestions for future episodes.
True.
Check out Jessie's awesome videos on YouTube. Just search for Welcome to My Vagina.
Check out Rebecca's awesome writing at franklyrebecca.com.
And head on over to morebanana.com to check out all of the awesome projects by our production company.
Yeah.
And thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Kate, for being our amazing, dope-ass fucking producer.
Cool.